coalition forces and begin striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Екатерина Кудашкина. Trotsky might be the code word for understanding the nature of chaos in the Middle East and beyond. The 1917 October Revolution in Russia shook the world, spreading fear of communist atrocities and red terror. Now, almost 100 years later, the Soviet state is gone, but Trotsky-style policy, along with the terror and atrocities, have grown into a global threat that was never before. So, what kind of links are there between Trotsky's theory and neocon policies? And this is something we are discussing with our guest speaker, Dr. Mateusz Piskorski, head of the European Center for Geopolitical Analysis in Poland.
Most of the former American Trotskys turned to neoconservative ideas. Those are people like Irving Kristol, and his son, people like Robert Kagan, and all those allies who are, let's say, forming the agenda of contemporary American politics, regardless of which party is in power now. I mean, we had the neoconservative agenda during the administration of George W. Bush, of course. It was very open at that time, but still continuing. We have people like Victoria Nuland, was actually very active when it comes to the Ukrainian crisis. And she's the wife of Mr. Kagan, who is one of the leaders of the neoconservative movement, which means that the idea which lies behind the American policy, the American way of interfering in foreign affairs, in the affairs of other countries, is actually the same. It's quite similar. Of course, during the Bush administration, we had some voices which stated it more openly, which claimed more openly that they are going to interfere with the so-called hard power, which means military interference. And now we have more focus on the so-called soft power. But anyway, the final goals of the Obama administration and of former Bush administration are quite similar.
Do you think we could, by the way, remind our listeners of what Trotsky's theory is all about? Do I get it right that it's something dealing with permanent revolution?
First, it's something dealing with a permanent revolution, but second, this is an idea which claims that there's one universal political system, one universal civilization, which should be spread all over the world, regardless of local traditions, of local history of several nations, which means that this is quite a way the Americans do the international politics since many years. I mean, they are, on the one hand, they are claiming that they are a unique state, which is the only one in the world, but on the other hand, they try to impose all their values and also their way of thinking about political system and organizing of public life to the other countries, doing it, of course, by force. And this is the ideological basis. Of course, we cannot forget about the interests which lie behind all those interventions in different places. But anyway, from the ideological point of view, they claim that the American system and the American, let's say, system of values, also the only one which is of universal importance, is quite characteristic for the Trotsky's way of thinking, which is continued by the neoconservatives in the United States, and which is the most important, I would say, basis of American foreign policy ideology in contemporary times.
In fact, Dr. Piskorski, I suppose everyone knows that our country, Russia, had some experience with Trotsky's ideas and methods. And something which we do remember is that they're all associated with utmost cruelty, crimes against humanity. Do I get it right that this is also the case right now?
Yes, of course. The end, according to the idea of Trotsky's permanent revolution, the end justifies the means. All means, which means that all kinds of bloody terror revolutions might be organized just to bring the final goal, which is the world revolution, which means change which would embrace all the countries of the world. And secondly, of course, to control the power in different countries. The Americans are also using another idea of Trotsky, as you have already mentioned, the idea of permanent revolution, which means that if you bring to power within a kind of revolution, if you bring to power one political force, it should feel all the time the threat of being overthrown by another political force, which is already prepared and ready, and which makes it very obedient to those who are organizing all the so-called fake revolution processes, in this particular case, the United States. So, of course, the ideas, the instrumentalization of the ideas of Trotsky, including the idea of the terror of permanent revolution embracing all the world, are used, or perhaps some Trotskyists, some contemporary Trotskyists would say that they are abused by the American neoconservatives since several years.
We're exploring the links between Trotsky's theory and neocon policies. Our guest speaker is Dr. Mateusz Piskorski, head of the European Center for Geopolitical Analysis in Poland.
Burning point.
So, do I get it right then that this ideology has created something more known as a controlled chaos theory? Any relations?
Yes, of course. This ideology, well, the modified Trotskyism, is behind all the activities of U.S. authorities all over the world. And the way of thinking, which was represented by Trotsky in the past, is still alive in the minds of American political elites. This is quite interesting, concerning that on the one hand, U.S. is still rejecting all the, let's say, leftist ideas of the 20th century, regarding them as communist or dangerous left-wing revolutionary ideas. But on the other hand, it uses very successfully the methods which were invented by Trotsky and other Trotskyists. So in this case, it's just using the left-wing methodology, perhaps not ideology, but methodology of revolutionary activities to achieve its own goals.
It's interesting that I suppose it's precisely what we are witnessing in Ukraine right now.
Yes, of course. I think that the Americans, after having their successful, let's say, test of this methodology, of these methods during overthrowing of President Viktor Yanukovych early this year, are thinking that any president of Ukraine in the future would dare to, let's say, not obey the orders from Washington and would dare to build bridges between Ukraine and Russia will be threatened by another Maidan or Euromaidan. Euromaidan perhaps will be called another way. Perhaps there will be a new Maidan with, let's say, new ideas voiced during this Maidan. But anyway, all the Ukrainian politicians and leaders must feel that the fate of President Yanukovych is like an example for them to be obedient to their masters, to those who brought them to power when Yanukovych fell.
Well, that might imply and that might explain why the U.S. administration has been congratulating Kyiv authorities with this election, though the Rada has become largely ultra-nationalistic, not to say neo-Nazi.
Yes, of course. United States are legitimizing the only political force now which could be capable of organizing another Maidan, as we have seen in the last month in several times during different protests which were organized by the ultra-nationalist camp. We could notice that this is the only power which is still able to bring the people out on the streets in Kiev to organize some brutal, aggressive protests and actions like the one in the parliament when they were throwing the people to the trash bins and so on. So the Americans perfectly realize that this is the only force which could mobilize the people and which could possibly organize another so-called revolution if, for instance, President Poroshenko would try to be more compromising with his Russian partners. So he must feel all the time the threat that if he will not be obedient, he might have problems similar to that of President Yanukovych. And I think that President Poroshenko is actually aware of that, and that is why he tries to appease all those ultra-nationalist forces. He tries to symbolically support several ideas, like the ideas of building new historical identity of Ukraine. He's fulfilling here the wishes of the ultra-nationalists by glorifying the Nazi collaborators from the times of Second World War. So as far as Poroshenko understands this, he will have the support of U.S. from the very first moment if he would try to somehow, let's say, sincerely negotiate with Russia and try to get a compromise with Russia. He might have real troubles and real problems with his former supporters from the U.S.
Our guest speaker is Dr. Mateusz Piskorski, head of the European Center for Geopolitical Analysis in Poland.
Burning point.
And I've ran into an interesting quote. I suppose it's by Mr. Trotsky himself, who used to say that real revolutionaries are in fact located in Wall Street, which I think might imply that he's pointing to financial companies and financial system. Now, we see that the European Union financial system of governance is drawing a lot of criticism from inside the European Union. Now, Hungary is the latest example. So do you think that the situation we have witnessed in Ukraine might be somehow extrapolated to the European Union and the old world at large?
When it comes to European Union, there's another discussion. It's a discussion about the extent of sovereignty of European Union as a subject of international law and the extent of American influence on European Union. If you look at Hungary, their real problem started when Prime Minister Viktor Orban tried to, let's say, build bridges and possibilities of cooperation with those global superpowers who are, let's say, and not very friendly with the United States, which means, of course, Russia in the first place, but then also China. So he tried to play a role of a country which has a pragmatic foreign policy and which tries to cooperate with different centers of power in this world. And the consequence was that first, of course, there was a campaign, a huge campaign within the European Union against Viktor Orban and his party. And this campaign was organized mostly by pro-American forces and pro-American political leaders in the European Union. And second, of course, we had the sanctions, the blacklist of those people who are not allowed to enter the United States, published officially by the Department of State just a few weeks ago. So this is a confrontation, this is a kind of pressure exerted on a country which, on a small country which still tries to have partly, let's say, independent and sovereign foreign policy. And of course, the Hungarians are a good example of that, that if the Hungarians would succeed in, let's say, diversification of their foreign and economic relations, that would be an example for other European countries, perhaps including also Ukraine. I mean, for the Ukrainians who are still talking about their European dream, as they call it, Hungary might be a good example that within these existing European structures, financial structures, the so-called Troika, which decides about the transformation, economical transformation of European Union countries, that even inside this European Union, it's not such an ideal dream and that every country should try to build, to create different options of their external policy, not depending only on one center of power.
But, I mean, could the financial institutions start to react in a more decisive manner, shall we put it that way?
Of course. When it comes to Hungary, we have to remind the situation from the year 2012, when after, let's say, introducing some political reforms, Prime Minister Viktor Orban and his cabinet was refused financial support and the credits from different banks which are representing the European Union, like the European Bank of Development and Reconstruction. So this is, of course, a kind of financial influence exerted on those countries who are not obedient.
Do I get it right that Trotsky's kind of revolutions are still going on in the world with the world not much aware of that?
Yes, Trotsky's kind of revolutions are organized now in the name of the corporate interests, which is, of course, a paradox that the ideas and methods proposed by one of the, let's say, far-left thinkers are actually used to strengthen the control and strengthen the grip of international capital, which is politically represented by United States in the contemporary world. So this is a paradox from ideological point of view, but this is how the things are now.
Dr. Piskorski, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Dr. Mateusz Piskorski, head of the European Center for Geopolitical Analysis in Poland. And now we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Yekaterina Kudashkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.